Just pray for a moment. May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of all our hearts be acceptable in thy sight, O Lord, our strength and our Redeemer. Amen. You might just like for a moment to look at that verse that Tim Chapman has just read. The last little paragraph of that reading. All this took place to fulfill what the Lord had said through the prophet. The virgin will be with child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. God with us. It's really quite a reassuring, almost a cozy idea, isn't it? If that's the message of Christmas, that God is with us. And all will be all right in the end, because with God by our side, everything has got to turn out right. We'll be safe at death. God's a friend. He's a mate. He and I go back a long way together. And he's there to reassure and to comfort me. And then maybe we think just a little bit more. God is supposed to be the creator of the universe. You know, the universe is a pretty big place. So if there really is a God, he must be pretty big too. And actually, we are quite small. In fact, we are minuscule on a sort of cosmic scale. Even our knowledge of the cosmos is pretty pathetic. I came across the Book of General Ignorance just out this year. And if you haven't come across it, you might enjoy it. I'm going to read you a little bit from the introduction. There's an idea going about that the human race basically understands how the universe works. Not you and me, obviously, but scientists, perhaps, or experts. Regrettably, this is not the case. In the words of Thomas Edison, the man who didn't invent the light bulb, we don't know a millionth of 1% about anything. Goes on. It's a very well-kept secret, which they don't teach you at school, that nobody has the faintest notion what gravity is, or consciousness, or electricity, or viruses. We don't know why there is something and not nothing, and we don't know either how or why the universe began. Worse, 96% of the universe appears to be missing. The world is not solid. It's made of empty space and energy. But nobody knows what energy is, and they're beginning to suspect there's no such thing as emptiness. Well, I found that so striking that I brought every copy of that book on Waterston's shelves to give to our godchildren for Christmas. And if we are really so limited, it puts a rather different slant on the idea of God with us, doesn't it? When the American President Roosevelt found affairs of state pressing too heavily upon him, he would go outside after dinner and stand upon the lawn with his guests and look up at the night sky. And he'd locate the lower left-hand corner of the great square of Pegasus. And Roosevelt would say, "That is the spiral galaxy of Andromeda. It's as large as our Milky Way. It's one of 100 million galaxies. It's 750 light years away, and it contains 100 billion stars, each larger than our sun." And then he would say, "Now I think we feel small enough. Let's go to bed." It's the sort of thing I guess you could imagine Jed Bartlett saying if you're a fan of the West Wing. God with us. But it's a strange match if he is the creator and I am one of the smaller of his creatures. No wonder I need an introduction. No wonder he had to send his son in human form, so that you and I can have a chance of comprehending the creator of the universe. Look again, if you would, at verse 23. The virgin will be with a child and will give birth to a son, and they will call him Emmanuel, which means God with us. He made himself small enough to grow, for us to grasp. And think what a shrinking that was. for God to be born as a human being, to become a human embryo, so he could be God with us. Week 6, the size of an apple pip. Week 7, the size of a currant. Week 8, the size of a strawberry. But if you and I are ever to come to know God, we need the introduction that Jesus provides. God with us. God as humanity on our scale. So humanity can grasp God. But it's not just a problem of scale, is it? God, if he exists at all, is also perfect. He's holy. He's absolute goodness. And I most definitely am not. I don't imagine there's anyone here tonight claiming to be absolutely perfect, to be morally qualified to have a relationship with God. It's a sort of silly rhetorical question that preachers ask, don't they, from time to time. And in fact, one preacher did ask that question, and a man in the congregation stood up. And the preacher said, "Sir, are you actually claiming to be perfect?" "No," replied the man, "not for myself, but I'm standing as proxy for my wife's first husband." Well, if God's stature dwarfs us, God's nature condemns us. And that's why we shrink from him and sometimes kid ourselves he doesn't exist. It's his perfection versus our imperfection. But Emmanuel, God with us, was also, just a verse earlier, if you look back for a moment to verse 21, he was also called Jesus, because he will save his people from their sins. God didn't just come down to live amongst the humans he had created. He died to take the punishment that they deserve, to experience the separation our moral failures create between us and a holy God. And as he died, he cried, my God, why have you forsaken me?" And the answer to that question was you and me. Because we deserve to be God forsaken. And I guess all of us have experienced God forsakenness when God feels utterly different and distant from us and completely remote and unreal. But God, Jesus, never deserved that. God with us, Emmanuel. At Arlington National Cemetery in Virginia, there's a gravestone with a very simple inscription on it. It simply says this: "I want to stand where you are standing. I want to stand where you are standing." And underneath it has the story of an incident that occurred during the American Civil War. A Yankee soldier, only 19 years old, was part of a firing squad assigned to execute a man. And as he took aim at the man, he realized that he knew him. He put down his gun and he said to his captain, "I can't do it. That man has a wife and children at home. If I shoot him, I not only end his life, but I end their lives too. I'll make his wife a widow, and I'll be robbing the children of their father. I can't do it." So they came up with a plan. They agreed that that young soldier could take the condemned man's place. The 19-year-old Yankee marched up to the Confederate captive and said simply, "I want to stand where you're standing. I want to stand where you're standing." Captive took off his blindfold, walked away, back to his wife, back to his family, back to his life. But his freedom came at great cost to another. And that is what Jesus, God with us, says to us. "I want to stand where you're standing." Not facing a firing squad, but cut off from and condemned by God, as you and I deserve to be, so that we can stand where Jesus stands, loved by God forever. "I want to stand where you're standing." So God with us is much more than a promise of companionship, that cozy thought we started with. It's also an offer of salvation. A God who deals with our fundamental problems in order that we may have a relationship with Him. God wants us to meet Jesus so that Jesus can take us with Him to meet God. And that is the invitation that God extends to you and to me through Jesus, Emmanuel. The possibility to return where we belong with God, knowing Him and being known by Him forever. Now, it would be my hunch that not everybody here knows that relationship. There will be some that do and rejoice at it. It's the most important thing in our lives. Others, for whom it's still a bit of a puzzle. Is there really something in this Christian thing that's as great as that? Do you remember the story of the mother in South America who lost her daughter to a life of prostitution in one of the great cities? And eventually the mother couldn't bear it any longer. And she traveled to that city and had hundreds of copies made of a photograph of her daughter with just 8 words written on the photograph. And then she went all over that city, sticking up those photographs wherever she could, in bars and clubs and boarding houses and discotheques and brothels and parks, everywhere. So sooner or later, that daughter would come across a photograph of herself, and on it the words, "Wherever you are, whatever you've done, come home. Wherever you are, whatever you've done, come home." And you know that is what God is saying to us in Jesus, God with us, Emmanuel. Wherever you are, whatever you've done, come home to the God who made you, the God who loved you, and the God who wants to make your life meaningful in a way that it has never been meaningful up till this moment. So it's worth living on this earth, and we know why we're living on this earth, and we know what we're living for on this earth. And so that when we die, we will say that life was worth living, because I lived it for the one thing that mattered. The Creator God who brought this universe into being and put me in it to serve Him. Wherever you are, whatever you've done, come home. Nobody too guilty. There's nothing on our consciences that has not already been paid for. And there is no one too good. Perhaps you've begun to discover that our own goodness can't get us home. Doesn't make God real to us. Even our own religion can't reunite us with God. It took me years to realize that. Hundreds and hundreds of services I attended as a non-Christian before I realized that my own goodness wouldn't do it. Church services do not get you into the presence of God. I couldn't deal with my own sin. Only Jesus could do it. God with us. Wherever you are, whatever you've done, wherever you are, even at church, in church at a carol service at the moment, come home. Maybe this Christmas would be a good moment to think a little bit more about these things. And if you're the sort of person like I was and am, and you like to think things over in your own time, you don't much enjoy being spoken at by somebody standing up above contradiction in a pulpit. There's a new little book by Vaughan Roberts out this Christmas. It's called Christmas in 3 Words. It's an easy little read. And I've brought a few copies with me tonight, and I'd be delighted to give you one as you leave. If you just wanted to catch me at the door and say, "Mark, I'd love one of those booklets to think things over a little bit more," do that, please. And I'd love to put one of these into your hand.